got something for them today, y'all.
Woo, that's right. This is the Pregame Engineer Tailgate Mayor Racing Podcast, episode number 138. It's Thursday, March 15th, 2018. I'm Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace. I'm in the PTM Podcast studio with Pregame Engineer Andrew Sherwin. What's up, dude?
Woo! I got off a plane less than 3 hours ago.
I was going to say, you're dressed up nice for the podcast today.
Yeah. Call it shit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was in a business meeting at 8 o'clock this, or 8:30 this morning.
Woo! Well, you're on the PTM podcast today.
Well, not even Charlotte. I was in upstate North Carolina.
Look out. Well, y'all know what the deal is. PTM Podcast is sponsored by you. That's right. You go to patreon.com/PTM. Join the What You Drinking Club for as little as $1 a month. Get that free koozie. Best part is, every cent in 2018, we're donating to sponsoring drivers. So join the PTM Posse today. Be a part of the sport you love. This week's show is brought to you by our official sponsors at the $5 and up per month level. Look out, y'all. Here it goes. Catherine Kingston, Ashley Stang, Laura Henshaw, Harry Balzania, Mick Rose, Aaron Bearden, Robert Keplinger, Tony Salt, Colby McClam, Eric Kebner, Ryan Kiefer, Marilyn Best, Patrick Cleary, Jeff Brown, Brandon Crowd, Kathleen McDonald, Stacey Wright, Brandon Carl, Billy Workman, Rika Porter, Jumpy Bobbin, Les Miller, Jason Rudd, and welcome to the PTM Posse as an official sponsor, Tommy Witt, this week.
All
How
right.
about that one? Woo! Boy,
What's
that was
up, Tommy?
That was a mouthful.
You're going to have to, like, modify the way you do that at some point.
We hope,
right?
Saying it, right?
That's what we want.
Maybe. If I've got to read 100 names every week, so be it. I don't know. For a little while. I don't know. But
we may not want to subject our guests to that.
That is so, it's so much fun right now. Hey, and we said we're donating every cent to sponsoring drivers. Guess what? We've got a meeting with a guy on Saturday.
We're getting real close, y'all.
Yeah, yeah. We have a meeting, and I'm bringing the checkbook, y'all. Like, that's how real. That's how real this is going, and we're real excited to announce it. It might be a couple weeks before we can have him on and do the whole ordeal, but boy, we are chomping at the bit for that. But since we're here, since we're ready to roll, we are super excited about everything, Sherwin, we got going on tonight. Holy crap. We've talked to one person. We've got a little drop-in later on for a special thing, but our most special thing right now, we want to welcome the show, driver of the ARCA Series, number 20, Venturini Motorsports Toyota, running 8 races this year, including Daytona, Talladega, Pocono, several 1.5-milers in there, and tidbit that we got, and she's probably going to laugh at us, her brother-in-law is Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead. So welcome to the show, Lonnie. Crap! I didn't write your last name.
Munter.
Is it Munter or Munter? How do you say that?
It's got the two dots over the U. It's actually, my dad's from Germany, so it's pronounced Munter. Like
Munter.
Two,
okay.
Like
okay.
Two O's.
Welcome to the show, Leilani Munter.
Yeah.
Good thing we asked you before the show, right?
I know.
This is how this kind of goes.
Amateur hour. I'm an idiot. Leilani, what's happening?
Hi. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being on. This is so cool. It's a boatload of fun for us every time we get to talk to somebody, and the fact that we're able to do that so often is I don't know. I don't know what to say. We're excited. Sherwin is also at a loss for words,
right?
Evidently.
The whole racing community is what we've discovered in the process of doing 137 and now 138th episode is that a lot of people say yes to the.
You know what? quick sidebar. So Wally Action, our buddy old Wally, he retweeted something. I don't know who tweeted originally, but there's one of the NFL guys, quarterbacks, I can't remember who, has officially signed with this one company to be the official autograph dealer for him. So if you want his autograph, you don't go to like a session. You don't stand outside the track after the race is over. You send in your paraphernalia and you pay for shipping, and if you want something signed, you pay $199 to get it signed. Holy cow.
How much different
gosh.
Is that from stock car racing?
So thank you, stock car racing. Thank you, NASCAR. Thank you, ARCA drivers like Leilani Munter here. So
yes, my autographs are free. I right. don't charge anything. Right?
I'd probably have to pay somebody the damage if I sign their thing, you know?
I'm telling you, I'd rather have a picture with Leilani Munter than have Tom Brady's autograph.
I agree with that. It's worth more.
Like autographs are sort of on the way out anyways. Usually people, when we were at Daytona just last week or last month, most people want pictures. They want like a selfie with you. So I feel like that's sort of taking over on the, you can still sign something, but people would rather have a picture, I think.
What do you think about that? Do you like
I'm
that?
I'm fine with it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Because I always wonder when I walk up to drivers. So we were at Phoenix this last weekend, and I could not get my phone in selfie mode. And Bain, me and Sherwin and Trevor Bain are standing there. I'm trying to take the – I took a picture of the people across from
Trevor
us.
Trevor made fun of Rusty. Yeah, he goes, I'm pretty sure you just took a picture of him.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, I sure did. Oh, well. Leilani, we start this show the same way every week. What are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking a cider. Got it in my reusable mug here.
The Tesla branded mug,
I'm drinking like an apple cider, so it's sort of like a beer, but it's a little bit sweeter than a beer because it's made with apples.
I love it. I love it.
I like ciders.
Is that allowed? Am I allowed to drink on set?
Yes. Absolutely.
It's actually strongly encouraged.
Strongly encouraged. We have several folks who don't, and we totally respect that. But the people who do get a little bit more attention.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, we would encourage anybody that's new and following along now that hasn't seen the episode with Cynthia Hill to go check that out. Because she's the only guest we've had that showed up deeper in the bag than we were.
What was she drinking?
Everything. All of it. Yes, is the answer. Oh, it was fun. It was fun. That was fun for a different
first one, but maybe by the end of the show, I'll be drunk.
Yeah, you'll get a second and third round.
Up, everyone.
As every week, before we get to talking with Leilani, car number 38, it's 100. It's episode 138.
Are we telling them what we drank?
Oh, go ahead. Well, it's the same thing as
our drink. Yeah, it's always. Yeah, white label Jim Beam and ginger ale for me.
And I've got the Coke going on, and I've got this beer on deck. It's the So Fresh, So Green from Terrapin over here. And I like So Fresh, So Green. I mean, that obviously it's referencing the Outkast song, Outkast from Atlanta. Terrapin is Atlanta area, we'll say, so that's cool.
Yeah, I've got one from Michigan, Bell's, the Two-Hearted
Absolutely.
IPA.
Nothing wrong with that. Car number 38, David Gilliland has the most races in that one, 243 races in 38.
Oh, that's right.
Elliott Sadler had two wins in the 38.
And that was the M&M's ride for such a long time.
Would you believe that Ned Jarrett has a win in the 38? 14 races, he's got a win. Of course he does. You know?
He won 50 races in like a six-year career.
Yeah.
And like he hung it up at like age 31, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
After two championships and 50 wins, imagine what that guy would have had. He would have been in the Pearson category probably.
So this guy isn't my spotlight driver this week, but Bob Welborn was 1-for-1, batting 1,000. In the 38 car.
One start, one win.
One start, one win in the 38 car.
That's absurd.
So y'all look him up. Bob Welborn.
He's got to be the only guy that has that at the cup level.
I think there was another one a few weeks ago, but it's rare. I've seen two, I believe. But with that, spotlight driver this week, Gwynn Staley. 14 races, 3 wins, and 9 top fives in that car, in the 38 car. He was born in 1927 out of Burlington, North Carolina, 69 races over 8 years. All three of his wins, though, were in the 38 car. So that's kind of cool. His first win, listen to this, Sherwin. This is cool stuff. First win in 1957 at Coastal Speedway in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. He lapped the field. He was the only car on the lead lap. And y'all who like complain about today's racing and boring or too much domination or whatever, this dude lapped the field. Like
what Harvick did at Atlanta,
basically. Almost, yeah. But past 9 more guys or whatever, you know? Jeez. He won again twice in that same year, and in the last race that he won, he lapped the field again.
Well, so, hold on. This dude's name is Gwynn?
Yep. Gwynn.
All right. Yep. That's new. I didn't know that was about a asexual name.
G-W-Y-N, evidently.
Yeah.
But he at Langhorne Speedway in Pennsylvania, lapped the field again. He was a road course ringer. He averaged 9th place on the Emba Turner tracks there. Passed away in 1958 during a wreck in the convertible division at Atlantic Rural Fairgrounds in Richmond, Virginia. We're going to hats off. We're going to go drinks up. Cheers to Gwynn Staley.
I didn't wear a hat today because everybody's making fun of me. I wear a hat so much they don't think I have any hair.
Well, there it is.
Y'all wrong.
I've got a Georgia State hat on today. My wife went to Georgia State for her undergrad and her master's, and they are in the tournament. They're playing tomorrow night. They are probably going to lose their butts off because they're a 15 seed. But
well, they may Loyola Marymount mount it.
Exactly. We're going to root our butts off for them. Leilani, who have you got in your bracket?
In my bracket?
In your NCAA bracket this year.
Oh, I be honest, I don't really watch sports. The only two that I'll watch is rugby, because my husband is from New Zealand.
Okay.
So rugby is like, that's what all New Zealanders watch. They're a tiny little country. They have like 4 million people, but they are huge dominators in the rugby world. So I watch a little bit of rugby, and then I'll watch the ARCA races. Like, you know, leading up to my races, I want to see who the other cars are, who I'm racing against. I'll probably watch some old races from last year, because I'm going to be going to some new racetracks this year that I haven't actually raced on before. So I've never raced at Michigan International Speedway. I've never raced at Pocono before. I've never raced at Charlotte before. So I'll probably go back and watch those races, and I'll also probably tune in and watch the cup races at those tracks. But it's more like, you know, for me, when I'm watching racing, it's more like research. And yeah. And then I'll watch, of course, the races that I run in, and it's to, you know, see what kind of exposure I got for the sponsor, and study the things that I did right and the things that I did wrong, and, you know, hopefully help me do a better job at the next race.
Rugby is like football for people who aren't wimps, evidently. that stuff's crazy.
Well, one of the things...
Crazy. I mean, they don't have any padding.
Right.
You know, it's just them. And the first time that I ever went to a rugby match, one of the main guys from the New Zealand, the big New Zealand team is called the All Blacks. And he got hit on the head. It like cracked his head open. He was like bleeding. He grabbed his shirt and like put the shirt where his head was bleeding. It turned all red because he was bleeding that hard. And then he just like kind of wiped it off and went back out on the field and kept playing.
Just about to say,
just like, oh my!
Guarantee he played later again. Those guys are outrageous. We had a few rugby players in our fraternity at school, and you did not want to mess with them. Like, you could hit them in the face, and they'd start smiling and walk toward you with three teeth out and bloody nose, and like, oh, that's how it's going to be. All right, let's do this. And you're like, okay, no, let's not do this. I'm out.
I was kidding.
Yeah. So with that, Leilani, tell us about what you're doing and about your team this year. I mean, 8 races this year that you're going to, or not just going to, but participating in, and what you're looking forward to with that.
I mean, it's really exciting for me because I'm a driver that can only run when I've been able to raise the sponsorship. I don't have any of my own funds or family funds to race off of. So it's always, you know, been a lot of work to get in a car. And typically my races have been, you know, one-off deals where I go and I race Daytona, and then I don't know when I'm going to be in a car again. So it's sort of an insecure feeling, right? You don't know every single time I've sat in a race car. Mm-hmm. I've thought in my head, this could be the last time I ever drive a race car. So this year it's really different for me because I haven't had this sort of, you know, knowing that I'm getting back in a car. So we raced Daytona and, had a good finish there. We finished 8th there.
Wow.
And then my next race will be at Talladega at the end of April. And then Charlotte Motor Speedway at the end of May. I'm pretty excited about that because ARCA has actually not raced at Charlotte for like 14 years.
I didn't know that.
And then I've got 2 races at Pocono, Pennsylvania. I've got 1 race at Michigan International Speedway, Chicagoland Speedway, and then Kansas Speedway will be my last race. So we're basically going to all of the ARCA races that are run in contingent with NASCAR Monster Energy Cup. And, you know, the reasoning for that is we're trying to give away free vegan burgers. We've been giving away the Impossible Burger. And so we want to be at tracks and at places where there's a high volume of people for us to give these away to.
That's awesome.
Here, I certainly would offer you a higher level exposure if you got paired up with the cup races, for sure.
Yeah. And Michigan, which Michigan race? The June one?
Yeah, I think it's in June.
Oh, man. Sure.
Well, I will be there.
Oh, great.
As it turns out. Yeah, I'm joining some podcast friends we met in this space. We were on the show this week.
Brandon Crowd, Lap Traffic Podcast.
Motor City, best NASCAR podcast coming out of Motor City for sure. But yeah, I'm going to fly up there. So yeah, maybe we'll have an opportunity to run into you.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great.
That's the best NASCAR podcast east of the Mississippi, Probably.
Well, except ours, but not.
Well, I was giving him that. Shoot.
He gets more attention than we do, so I'll we probably have to bow. Right?
Which of those tracks are
Shout
you...
Shout out, Brandon.
I don't know how to say it. Are you most, like, nervous is the right word, or most, like, I have no idea. Like, I know what I'm going to do at Daytona. I know what I'm going to do at Dega, but is there any that you're like, oh, man, we got some work to do there?
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. I've never even seen... What I've never been on Pocono in a race car before. So luckily we do have a test at Pocono before the first race. So we'll have one day of practice on Pocono. And then Charlotte, I have been on, but years ago, like the early 2000s when I first moved out here to North Carolina, I got a job. I was working as an instructor for Andy Hillenberg Fast Track Racing School. And so I've done actually a bunch of laps there and like ride alongs where I've got a passenger seat in the car. But that's, it's nothing like actually racing. And I think they've repaved it since those days. So it's going to be different. That's the first time ARCA has raced at Charlotte, I think since 2003. They had a couple of bad accidents. Somebody passed away in 2001, and then another person passed away in 2003, and they just stopped going to that track. Mm-hmm. So that one, I was talking to Billy Venturini. I was at the racetrack last week, and he was just talking about, that's a pretty fast track. So I'm thankful that I'll at least get a day of practice. But, yeah, I mean, it is definitely tough. You kind of have to show up and just, figure it out really quickly when you're there because you can't. We can't afford to like rent the racetrack and it would be very expensive. You're spending almost the same amount of money to go do your own test as you would to go to a race. I'm actually looking right now. I'm in the market for, I'm going to get some of the racing simulator equipment and I'm going to try that. I've never really done much of the video game simulator stuff, but I'm going to try it.
Awesome.
Tell us about your experience as a race instructor. That sounds really cool to me. And Tommy Joe, who's on here a lot, does that instruction stuff too.
Right, teaches Corvette racing.
Yeah, yeah. What's that like?
I mean, I haven't done it for a long time. This was back like 2003, 2004, 2005 when I was doing this. There's two things that you can do with us at the racing school. You could either pay to be in the passenger seat, and then I would be driving, and you would just be in the passenger seat, and I think I did like three hot laps, and then you come in. Or you can do sort of, it's like follow the leader. So I'm in a race car in front of them, and then the student is behind me, and the student is just supposed to stay with me. And as long as they're doing a good job and they're staying with me, then I can pick up the pace every lap. I think it's like a couple hundred RPM so you can go faster and faster and faster if you're doing a good job. And I've done a bunch of those ride-alongs at Charlotte. I actually had one day where I had a bunch of like VIPs out that my sponsor had brought out, and I was giving rides to all of these guys that were customers of my sponsor.
Oh, cool.
And when we pulled into the pit road, he was jumping out of the car and somebody else was jumping in, and he just kind of turned and said to me, he said, every time that you went into that corner, I could have sworn that we were going to crash and you made me pee my pants. And I thought that he was just like kind of joking, but turned out, yeah, he actually did pee the car.
Good for him. Good for you.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
That poor guy he was getting made fun of by all his coworkers. I felt so bad for him.
I was going to ask you, were there any like a-hole dudes that you're like, well, I'm going to show him?
Not really. I mean, I think when people come to these, when they were coming through our racing schools, they're rookies. They have no idea what they're doing, right? So they're, there was one funny time when it was a whole football team. So it was all these like huge guys. And I'm pretty tiny. I'm like 5'3" and I weigh like 105 pounds. And so I'm little. And I remember their faces like when Andy Hillenberg was like, this is Leilani, she's your instructor. And I'm looking up at like these gigantic, huge guys, and they were all just looking down at me like, her. She's the one that's going to teach us. So, you know, there's been sort of those little awkward situations where, you know, I don't know, maybe it is tough for a guy to get instructions from a little girl, but yeah, went fine. I never had anybody be mean or anything like that. There were definitely times when people would kind of freak out if they had claustrophobia. When you get in the cars, you know, it's a 6-point harness and the helmet, and you're really strapped in there. You can't really move. So we did have a couple of students that I felt so bad for. You know, they flew all the way out from some other state. They were so excited about doing the racing school, and then like I strapped them in, and they just couldn't handle that feeling of like not being able to move and feeling sort of like you're trapped. So they climb out of the car and we just give them their money back. But yeah, that was probably like the, of all the experiences, the worst one, you know, just because of the disappointment of the person that was so excited to go racing. And then when they got into the situation, they just couldn't do it.
I love the football team. I love like the little wins every once in a while in life where, all right, I'll show these guys and the guy who peed himself. Why not?
Well, heck yeah. I mean, and I tell you what, I'd be excited about learning race cars from a
female
woman.
Perspective.
Yeah. Oh,
I think there's something.
I don't have an ego problem there.
I don't either. This person knows what they're doing. I do not. Tell me.
I definitely think there's probably some people that prefer, you know, if they're a guy, they might prefer to have a male instructor. But, you know, the race car doesn't know who's hitting the pedals or who's turning the wheel. It doesn't matter. It's just pedals and a steering wheel, and whether you're a man or a woman, you know, you can be good or bad at it, and it has nothing to do with your gender.
Right.
Agreed.
So this year, with the 8 starts, what are your goals with this season now that you're able to kind of take a fresh look and you're not kind of race to race trying to figure out whether you're going to be in the next race or anything? What are your goals coming into this season?
I am trying to really listen to you. I have an amazing crew chief. I have Frank Kimmel as my crew chief, who's like the most winning ARCA driver of all time.
I was about to say, I know that name.
Yeah.
Have you heard of him? You might have heard of him.
We know enough about ARCA to know who Frank Kimmel is for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's won the championship 10 times. He's wearing a different hat now, you know. Now he's my crew chief, so he's making the calls for me. So I'm trying to listen to Frank and learn as much as I can. I want to have, you know, I want to have some good finishes. We qualified 5th at Daytona, and I made a big mistake on pit road. I slid my tires and flat spotted them. So we came in for our first pit stop, and I was actually the very first pit on pit road, which I had never been before, and it just came up so much faster than I'd expected. So anyways, I slid my tires and flat spotted them. Oof. And they were not ready for the pit stop was just going to be gas and go. We weren't planning on changing tires. So I just got gas and went back out and had to come back in a second time to get 4 new tires because I flat spotted them. So I went into the pits in 5th place and I came out in 31st. Which was just crushing, and I was so upset with myself for making that mistake. But, you know, we made a nice recovery. We made it all the way back up to an 8th place finish. You know, obviously I was disappointed in myself because if I had not made that mistake, we would have been running up front the whole time. So it just wasn't meant to be. So hopefully at Talladega, I'm going to be very careful to not flat spot my tires because it's, you know, it's those silly, tiny little mistakes that can, it seems like such a small thing to do and not that big of a deal, right? But it can actually ruin your entire race. So anyways, I'm pretty upset with myself about that. I haven't even been able to watch the race yet. I watched it and I watched it up until the point where we came into the pits and then I just couldn't face it because I'm just so angry with myself. But you know, just going to learn from my mistakes and move on to the next race. It's going to be, you know, a learning experience for me going to those new tracks that I've never been on. So, you know, Michigan, Charlotte, you know, Charlotte I've been on as an instructor, but it's not the same. We're doing like 160 miles an hour versus 190 miles an hour. It's not comparable. The track will feel totally different. And then, Pocono, yeah, so Pocono, Michigan, and Charlotte will be new ones for me. I've raced Chicagoland before in both the open wheel cars, and I've been there in an ARCA car. And then I've raced in Kansas before in an ARCA car. So those two won't be new to me. So yeah, I'm going to have a lot to learn, and, you know, we'll see how the simulator thing goes. I'm kind of shopping around right now, and I know some of the guys have like these crazy setups where it's, you know, it's a full on, it's like a racing seat, and they've got three big, monitors that kind of curve around, and it's really, you know, really intense stuff. They're spending like thousands and thousands of dollars on these simulators. So, I don't know how much value it will bring. I mean, I hear that it can help people, but we'll see. I'm in the market for it, and hopefully I'll have one here in the next week or two.
So it was, I think it was really was Carl Edwards was the one that was sort of really vocal early on about how much he could learn from the simulator.
Really? Okay.
And
I remember that.
You know, and this was right around the time, so the 5-post rigs came out, and then the 7-post rigs came out. And then everybody had one. And so that was, you know, what the team would use, because you could put in the entire topography of a race and plug
right.
in, you know, 300 miles, 200 miles, whatever it is, 500 if it was a cup race.
Right.
And you could run the chassis over that simulation. But even just, you know, what I would call a video game, and I have since learned that if you get into the iRacing community and call that a video game, you will get scalped. But it apparently there is a lot you can learn about where to lift, how to enter
right.
the corner, like what you're looking for in terms of pitch, like what angle
right.
you want to see, and
well,
stuff
and it,
like that.
It does have its flaws, too. If you remember, Carl Edwards was also the one who said, well, the last time I was in the sim, I was able to ride the wall at full speed, full throttle all the way around and gain some speed.
Speaking of Kansas.
Bounce, yeah, exactly. I think he was trying to pass Jimmy again in that race, and
yes.
he just ended up stuffing it. And he's
he did one of those W moves where you
yeah,
go
yeah.
high and then go low, like, and then he lost it going up and it smashed the wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't always translate. Just because it works in the game doesn't mean that it's going to work on the
right,
real racetrack.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah, do you guys play that stuff? Do you guys do iRacing?
I
well,
want to because of how. But here's the thing: I mean, you almost have to have like a real rig to play. To race iRacing. I still treat it as a video game. When you're not in it, I think that's how you treat it. And then you get in it, and you're like, no, this is a real thing. So I'm trying to be respectful of those folks. And I talked about it with the MOATF guys because they're into it. Yeah, they're into it.
Yeah.
And it's a whole ordeal. No, I'm not into it. I would love to try it a couple times and see if it's something I could get into, or if I just like the stupid like Daytona, the old school at Dave and Buster's Daytona racing thing.
Yeah, yeah. We had
slap the walls and crap.
At one point for like Super Nintendo, like when big screen televisions first became a thing, Rusty and I would race a NASCAR game, and I can't even remember which one it was. It was probably like 05 or something.
I think it was like the original Xbox.
And you could just, if you turn crash damage off, you just go into the corner at Martinsville and just, I mean, 12 tires
flats.
Are better than 8.
Yeah.
You just run into everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's funny. So
yeah, it doesn't work like that in real life. There is no turn off crash damage.
Right,
right,
right. Yeah,
right.
Where's that button?
Not only does it slow you down, but it's also expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's really cheap to just press the reset button.
Right.
I know. Sometimes I wish I just think to myself, you know, I wish I had picked up a cheaper sport. Like if I was a surfer, all you need is like a surfboard and like a bikini and some wax.
That's
well, and you hope Jaws isn't out there though. So there's different kinds of expenses for surfing.
True.
Yeah, but that is such a rare occurrence. Jaws gave sharks a bad name. We are far more dangerous to them than we are to sharks than they are to us.
Well, then,
we have
oh,
humans
I,
be-
I
have
believe
knocked
that
out
for sure.
90% of shark population.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I need to buy me a surfboard, some wax, and a bikini, Sherwin, and I am in.
I will not watch you
will,
do that, but I will support your desire
I will
to do
post
so.
Post Instagram pictures for everyone. So with that, Leilani, we said it in the pre-show. If you search Leilani Munter on Twitter, on Facebook, or on just online or whatever, you can't hardly find your name without finding your causes. So we know you're very passionate about it, and we want to make sure you're able to talk about that a bit. You're heavily involved in environmental activism. Your 2018 sponsorship is Vegan Strong. I think Tom had said you're activating at tracks, and with the Impossible Burger stuff, you're educating folks on the vegan lifestyle, and you only partner with companies that align with that lifestyle, advocating for solar and renewable and that sort of stuff. So talk to us a bit about that, how you got into that, and what your goals are there.
Yeah, so my background is in biology. I have a degree from the University of California in San Diego, and it's specializing, it's biology, but specializing in ecology, behavior, and evolution. So I sort of came from a very scientific family. My father was a neurologist at the Mayo Clinic. My mother was a hypertension nurse. Science was just a big part of my life growing up. And it was sort of natural course of events for me to go on to college and get into sciences. Then I got distracted by getting in a race car. I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie, so I enjoy things like jumping out of airplanes and scuba diving. I became a scuba diver in high school. I like things that are somewhat risky and make me feel alive. I feel like those are the kinds of things in life that do really make you live in the moment, right? There's nothing like standing on the edge of a plane and like jumping out into the blue sky. So racing came about due to my little adrenaline junkie inside of me. And I decided that, you know, I mean, essentially race cars are, they're 200 mile an hour billboards. You know, I mean, you can use that space to talk about whatever you want. And I decided that I wanted to talk about the things that I really feel are the most important issues of our time. I mean, humanity right now is facing a lot of issues that we have never faced before. We're living through the sixth mass extinction of species right now. This era has actually been named the Anthropocene by scientists, which translates to the age of man. It's where our human footprint on the planet is so great that we're actually changing the fossil record of the future. So we're making species blink out at a rate that's about 1,000 times faster than the natural background rate of extinction. And I don't want to see that. You know, I want this world to stay beautiful. I don't want the coral reefs to be bleaching. I don't want to see the rainforests ripped down or the oceans overfished. I want us to keep our planet beautiful. At this point right now, we only have one planet. So there is no backup plan at this point if we do enough damage here that it can't recover. So I used my race car to start talking about those things. So it was around 2006 that I really started to engage with the racing community about environmental issues and animal rights issues. So I was running in the Indy Pro Series, and I had a company named Smart Papers on my race car. They were a leader in the recycled paper industry. And all the companies that I've partnered with have been companies that are pushing the world in a better direction in some way. So solar power, electric cars, renewable energy. I've run two movies on my car, documentaries. The first one was a movie called The Cove that won the Academy Award in 2010.
Holy cow.
sorry?
I said, holy cow.
Yeah, it's actually the most winning documentary of all time. It won over 70 awards globally, including the Oscar. It's the first documentary in history to sweep all of the Guild Awards. It's just fantastic. And I ended up becoming an activist and volunteering for the man in that film, Rick O'Berry. And then I started to get connected to the director, who is a man named Luis Cejuez, that runs a nonprofit called the Oceanic Preservation Society. And through that connection, I ended up working and spending almost 5 years of my life working on a documentary film called Racing Extinction that aired on the Discovery Channel a couple of years ago. And it's available on, like, you know, Hulu, Amazon, Google Play, iTunes, all of those video on demand services. So I've spent a lot of, you know, a lot of my time is spent talking about these issues and fighting for these issues. I'm now on the board of the Oceanic Preservation Society. I'm on the board of a group called Empowered by Light that brings in solar power and battery packs to places that are in need of electricity. So in December, right before getting ready to race Daytona, I went to Puerto Rico and helped install solar panels on the rooftops of the fire stations down there, because something like 46 of the 94 fire stations down there had no power, so they couldn't even answer 911 calls. So through our nonprofit, we raised the funds to be able to get solar panels up on their roof, and then also a battery system so that at night when the sun was not shining, you know, the extra sunlight power is stored in that battery pack so they could function 24 hours a day.
Sherwin, I feel very inadequate right now in terms of things that I've accomplished in my life. I don't race cars, which, like, Leilani does, and then I also don't help, like, get fire stations.
Well, so one of the things, like, I want to say is to tie in the, you know, our last trip last weekend to Phoenix was that one of the things I noticed on our way from the airport to our motel was how many solar panels I saw, which is cool.
Yeah, I have
solar panels. So I'm sitting under my solar panels right now. You can't see them, but I've actually been powered at my house since January of 2014, fully by solar power.
That's awesome.
And I have a net meter, so the meter is constantly recording, like, how much solar I'm putting into the grid, and then at night it's recording how much I take out. And we don't produce enough we're producing more solar than we actually use. We've got an electric car. I drive a Tesla Model S. That's 100% electric. So I've now done on the personal car side of things, I have not been to a gas station since September of 2013, and I've driven over 72,000 miles just on the free solar electrons that land on my roof every day. So I haven't quite added up, you know, how much that is in savings on gasoline, but I think it's quite a bit.
That's super cool, and I think a lot of times we unfortunately meddle in the politics of what happens here, and there's a doggy, or no, kitty. That's a big kitty.
This is Rico Berry. He's named after the man from the Cove.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
He does not like to get picked up, but he is named after the Rico Berry from the Cove, the guy that I was just telling you about, and we have three rescue cats, so
yeah,
you might see a couple of them coming in and out of shots. I think when I'm ignoring them and they're not getting attention, they feel the need to just come to me and interrupt my interviews quite a bit when I do this stuff.
It sounds like what a good description of a cat would be.
Yeah,
I think one of the really cool things about what we're seeing in the wall, the people that are actually following live, everybody is being is very supportive of what you're doing, Leilani, and that to me is cool. I'm appreciative that our audience finds those things to also be cool.
Well, like I said, it goes there's so many politicizing of these things.
Yeah, let's depoliticize this.
But depoliticize and look at, hey, you hadn't paid an electric bill or gone to daggum gas station a long time. I sure would like to do that. How do I do that? Well, you do these things. So bringing back to racing, I know you said we were saying that you're doing a lot of activation at tracks and you're educating folks and stuff. What has the reaction been among, I would say that the racing community, whether it's a stigma or a stereotype or the truth, is probably one of the last frontiers for someone to walk into this type of thing. I'm tiptoeing around exactly what you know what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
But really, what has the reaction been as you've been there and as people have walked up and talking to them?
It's been really positive. I mean, at Daytona, we gave away thousands of samples of the Impossible Burger. We met so many people that were already vegan, actually.
Oh, wow.
So I just posted a video to my Instagram and to my Twitter and to my Facebook that's like a 60-second clip of just all of these NASCAR fans that, as we were feeding them and having these conversations, you know, a bunch of them were like, oh, yeah, no, I've been vegan for 5 years now.
Wow.
And we're like, oh, really? There were so many of them that the producer that was on hand to sort of record what was going on at the tent said, you know what, we should talk to these vegan NASCAR fans. So we got a little recording of all these different race fans from all walks of life, you know, just recording, I'm a NASCAR fan and I'm a vegan. And it really just blows away the stereotype, right? I played I debuted it at South by Southwest. I just came in from Austin. I was giving, I was on a panel discussion there, and I screened that video during my speech. And, you know, it's just the last thing you wouldn't expect. I was actually surprised by how many vegan race fans there were. I met a guy who had tried my vegan chicken wings last year at Daytona, and his dad has since gone vegan. And he said, you know, he's been a vegan ever since he visited your tent last year. His cholesterol is down. He's off his diabetes medications. He's lost like 10 pounds. He feels great. So there's, I mean, you know, the health of the planet is really dependent on how we as a people live. And we have not been doing a great job as stewards on the planet. We, you know, between pollution and habitat deforestation, we're dumping so much carbon in the atmosphere. The ocean is absorbing a lot of that carbon. It's absorbing about a third of the ocean, of the carbon that goes into the atmosphere is absorbed by the ocean. So the ocean is becoming more acidic. It's changing the pH. There's spikes in ocean temperature. So a lot of the coral reefs are bleaching. There's a great documentary that's out on Netflix now called Chasing Coral that a friend of mine made. And we all need to, you know, make an effort to try and reduce as much as possible the damage that we're doing, right? Because there's 7.6 billion people on the planet right now. The carrying capacity of the Earth, as estimated by a lot of ecologists that know more about it than I do, they estimate the carrying capacity, assuming all of us were living in relative prosperity with running water and electricity and a roof over our head, is approximately 2 billion people. And right now we're at 7.6 billion with a growth rate of over a million people net every 4 days. So you didn't have to be a scientist to do that simple math. It's not sustainable, and mathematically, you know, it's pretty easy to understand that we cannot continue on as we are. So changing our habits by, you know, eating more plants, putting up solar, making your next car electric, like all of those little things, not only are you helping reduce your damage to the planet, but all the people around you. Like every time I drive my Tesla to the racetrack and the race fans come and see my Tesla, like I'm planting a little seed that they're thinking, maybe my next car will be electric. And when I talk about the fact that, you know, it's got 100% torque from zero, I mean, the latest Tesla with the 100 kilowatt battery pack, I think it's 0 to 60 in like 2.4 seconds.
I think that's what I've seen. I've watched like the videos and stuff of the people in the cars, and the dude usually, it's really funny because he turns around and he's like, okay, are y'all ready? And there's my favorite is there's this dude, you can tell he's excited. He's like a car guy or something. He knows what 0 to 60 in 2.4 means. And his teenage daughter is in the back seat doing her thing on her phone, you know, and she, as soon as they mash the gas, the phone is gone. Right. And she is this number right here. Just I'm
Gravitron.
Yeah. Just completely lost. So I absolutely love that. There's that video is out there somewhere. And it's fantastic. I love it.
I'm gonna look for it. Once you feel that 100% torque from zero, like you never want to drive a gas car again, because that feeling of having that much power just right there, where with a gas car, like you have to get the RPMs up before you have any torque. So, I mean, it happens to me in North Carolina all the time. Like when I pull up to a stoplight and I'm the first car in line and some muscle car or sports car comes up next to me and I know they're going to want to race. I mean, it is just, it's like Christmas morning for me, because in absolute dead silence, like they're revving their engine. They think they're so cool. and they're making, you know, all these noises, and I'm just sitting there in dead silence. And I can actually be, I've timed this, at some of the bigger intersections in Mooresville, mm-hmm. where it's a little bit wider, I can actually be going 65 miles an hour by the time I hit the lights, like going under the stoplight. And these guys are they're still just leaving the line. And I kind of love doing it in dead silence. There's something like, we've always associated, and you guys are car guys, so you get this, you always associate speed with being loud, right? Like, oh, it's a loud car, like they must be fast. Not the case anymore. Now I can, in absolute dead silence, just blow their doors off. And it is so fun.
I love it. You need something, you need like a shaming sound, like some sort of wah wah to play out the back speaker, or like one of those air horns. See ya.
Without fail, I am just laughing at the top
big
of my
lungs
whenever that.
maybe the sound of the laughing is it. Leilani,
the clown from from Happy Gilmore.
Die, clown!
You're gonna die, clown!
I love it, Leilani. We could sit here and talk forever, and we need to talk some more at some point. But we've got to start closing this thing out, unfortunately. Okay. But thank you so much for being on, and let's do this again sometime, huh?
Yeah, it was really great to talk to you.
It is, it's a boatload of fun, and let's definitely figure out where to see you next. Talladega, Michigan, sounds like you'll be there and stuff, but tell us, Sherwin, was there something else on the, you had something on the thing?
Well, yeah, so I did have a strange, do we?
Oh, yeah, let's do that. I forgot that, because we didn't get it. So Ashley J. Stang, she sends us a question every week. So Ashley, or Sherwin, take it away with Ashley. And this is off the wall. This is going to be,
this is usually something goofy.
This is new to me, too.
Strange was Stang. This is strange on my phone, so Rusty's not seen it.
No, I have no idea what's coming.
This happens a lot.
Are these questions from like, the listeners, or...?
Ashley J. Stang has been a supporter.
One listener in particular that's been very supportive.
Okay.
And she she's got a sense of humor about her. a lot of times I have to censor what she sends me, but I don't have to today. Really, this is a little bit.
Already.
This is slightly a little bit more serious, but
okay.
What is the most boring story you ever had to sort of endure from someone who thought they were telling you something funny? And then how did you, how did you get away from it? How did you walk away from it?
Oh, Lord. I know I have this story.
So many boring stories in my life. Like, how can I possibly pick one or even remember it? That happens all the time. I mean, when you're at these big events like South by Southwest, there's like 200,000 people at these events. And I always gracefully just have to grab a drink or have to go to the bathroom, and I will always politely say, really great to talk to you. I have to use the restroom, and I'll excuse myself, and then I just never come back. That's
Ghost.
The way I get out of it.
That's the way to do it.
I don't know that I can like pinpoint the boring, like one boring story that stands out from another.
No, that's good. No, this is.
I spent a lot of time lobbying in DC, so. Being with lawmakers and legislators is very, very dry and can be very, very boring. So I'm going to have to say that probably the most boring story would have come out of one of my meetings in D.C.
hanging out with legislators sounds horrific.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I'm not, like, if I should say this on air.
But we're fixing to.
But I'm going to. And this is bad. So my parents went on a 14-day Mediterranean cruise this past summer. So just under a year ago, right? And they had an incredible time. They visited all the places from Pompeii to Leaning Tower of Pisa. They were in Spain, Barcelona, Rome, all these places, right? They did all this stuff. And so we went and had dinner with them after they came back, right? And for half an hour, my dad told the story of how they lost his luggage on the way there. And every second of that story, and every like little detail of like where they went after and how he got there and how he had to drive back to the airport in Barcelona to get this thing. And then they told him it was gone, but it wasn't gone. And he didn't know where to, and it was supposed to be on the plane the next day, but then it wasn't on the plane.
Oh my God.
And
God,
I'm like, Dad,
kill me.
You were just at like 14 days of the most incredible things that I want to hear all about. And then it was over. Then we had to leave. And the only thing I heard about that day was about that stupid luggage.
Stupid luggage.
So I love you with all my heart, Dad. I promise this. But that story, oh, Lord. So if you're telling, Lord, Brandon, you go to hell.
I in the comments.
That's
show.
Not okay.
Does he listen to it? Is he going to hear this?
I don't know. I have no idea. But
I guess you're going to find out if he
listens. I love him to death. He is my favorite person on this earth, and I mean that with everything. But I want to. I still haven't heard any stories from France and
anywhere.
And, yeah, Italy and all the rest of it. I just know about the luggage. So. Anyway, that's what can I say?
I don't even know if I have anything to operate in this strangest thing. I know I've definitely asked somebody rudely, does this story have an end? But I can't pinpoint.
Colin's exact, a good one. Yeah. Colin, you know, our buddy Colin.
Are you done yet?
Yeah. he'll go off a little bit, and sometimes he'll hit, and sometimes you're just going, Colin, is this thing over yet or what? So.
On that note,
Leilani, thank you so much for being on. Let's do it again.
Okay, absolutely. Thanks All right. for having me.
Well, you take care and plug something. Tell people where they can find you real quick.
Ah, okay. You can find so the race car that I'm running is the number20veganstrong.com race car. So you can go to veganstrong.com. And then my website is just leilani.green. And I do social media. I just couldn't learn another social media, so I don't do Snapchat. I know that's what all the young kids are doing these days, but I'm not a young kid anymore. So I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and you can find me just by searching my name. They're all just at Leilani Munter. So I'll see you guys on social media.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Leilani, you're the best. Thank you so much for joining. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye. Dude.
That was pretty cool.
That was awesome to talk to Leilani.
Reaction in the
YouTube
wall has been pretty good.
I love everybody hanging out and talking and stuff. We are not done, y'all. We've got a lot of podcasts left to do here. I know it's just 52 minutes in. If you got to go, we understand on the YouTube. But we've got, first off, a few more things to talk about. Sherwin,
have show sheet stuff left.
We went to Phoenix this weekend. We might as well. Let me do this. Hold on. Give it a second. Hold on. Here it is. There it is. We're tearing it down.
Tear it down.
We went to Phoenix. Y'all, if you don't know, we were on the Lab Traffic podcast this week, and we talked deep into Phoenix, into everything that went on, into the analysis of all that stuff. If you need that from us, we were on there. You know exactly where to go.
Go over there and get it. Yeah.
Go over there and get it. And you should.
At Traffic PC.
We had a blast, and there was lots of laughs on that one. And if you want to call in to their show, it's 1-900-777-6969, just like we know. every time. No problems. But we are going to tear it down a little bit. Harvick with a third win. Sherwin, the PTM rain delay returned. But I think the big thing that we haven't talked about, because it wasn't made public yet, Chase. So I gave the
there was some cheatering.
Yeah, not the lap down. What the hell's the other one called? Because I've been drinking.
Lucky dog.
The lucky dog. I gave it to Chase. And lo and behold, for his third place finish, and lo and behold, he gets.
What did they cheat penalized. Up again? I don't even remember.
I can't even remember either.
I remember. So Cansian sent us a DM, and he was cussing up a storm about it. We were talking about that thing where we kind of agree that, you know what. Once you pass race inspection, you go race your car. NASCAR is going to take two cars in a random. They're going to take one and two in a random. So how they took one, two, and three? Like, really? Okay. Back to Daytona, they're going to tear it down and try to learn something. Like, why do you need to penalize for what you find there? Why don't you just go, all right, I'm okay with this. I'm not okay with that. This looks expensive. It looks like it's too expensive to do.
That was a great point that you made on Lap Traffic PC too. Why not just say, all right, don't, why don't y'all just not, or go ahead and not do that anymore, instead of like this being a 3 days later, oh no, you didn't get third place and we're going to dock this and $50,000 and your car chief suspended and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, yeah, that was.
And what, so what was the overall accomplishment from having administered that punishment?
I don't know.
Yeah. So that's the thing we don't understand as fans is what, how does that.
What did you actually do?
Does it really deter you from deviating in some sort of space around the car?
Good question.
Or is it, do you go, you know what? That was $50,000 worth of good learning on not doing that in the chase and getting in trouble there.
Right. Right. So, we haven't talked about it yet. We were at Phoenix. Like we freaking flew out there. We did our thing.
We made it rain in the desert.
Made it rain in the desert. We threw some chairs into the pool because
we is a little bit liberal.
I threw some chairs into the pool.
Rusty and I have a history with chairs at motels.
True, true. Motels being the ones with the doors on the outside.
Well, I guess that first one was really a hotel, but it had a balcony.
Had a balcony.
That was a different little
that
animal.
One. That got
there are so few hotels with balconies anymore.
Right, a sunburned plastic chair will explode, as it turns out, if it gets thrown off
as
the balcony.
As will a rocks glass.
40 feet. Well, a rocks glass from 40 feet, you kind of expect that. I didn't really expect that out of this
The chair was funny.
But the chairs into the pool, they don't float. We found
they do sink,
right?
Immediately.
They do sink.
We found
they were
out
on the
that
bottom.
Our friends that were, while quite adventurous about wanting to jump into the pool and make splashy and stuff, they were not quite prepared for our level of, what is it, buffoonery?
Enthusiasm?
Throwing chairs.
It did feel like that was kind of like a...
crazy as hell.
That was a record scratch. They were like, let's jump in the pool. I'll jump in. If you jump in, ha, ha, ha. We all jump in. We're splashing around. We're farting around. Next thing I know, I'm like, you know what? This party's doing pretty good. A chair should be thrown in the pool at this point. Right. This is, you know, this is my thinking at this point. Like, everyone will appreciate the comedy. We're at a motel of a chair being thrown in the pool. So, yes. You know, I fling a chair into the pool, and it seemed like they didn't get it, right? They were like, I'm not, whoa, what the hell? And, like, two of them went off to bed or something. And so I flung a second.
So there were more available chairs at that point.
I flung a second chair into the pool to be like,
hilarious.
Maybe you didn't see the first one.
It actually landed perfectly to where they were like, sitting upright on all fours,
maybe,
next to each other.
Yeah. Maybe they didn't see the first one quite right. This is all Rusty thinking in his time. But I threw the second one. I think everybody else went to bed. So
yeah, pretty much. Right, we don't want to see when the table goes in. We don't want to be here. We're probably not going to put the table
in. But y'all stop us at the race. Let's talk about Phoenix at some point. With that, it's time to gas it up.
That picture is available.
It is? It is, yeah. We didn't delete
hopefully
that thing.
Whatever that place was in West Phoenix don't like call you up and be like, hey, some chairs.
Oh, the Travelers in Phoenix.
I don't think they're going to have
Yeah, they'll be all right.
It's going to be fine. It's going to be completely fine.
Oh, man. So, going to Fontana, dude. Auto Club Speedway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As it turns out. Five lanes of good racing.
No kidding. Every one of them. Quick shout out to Cliff from Right Sides Only. I think he's already there. And
I believe that I saw that.
Rocking hard. So, I'm jealous. But, I mean, you can only be so jealous, you know. I've been to half the races so far this season, right?
And
so
like, and another three
somebody
weeks,
gets a turn,
and another 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever, we'll be, have been at like 40% of the races.
Right,
on
right.
The season.
We're going to Bristol,
and if Harvick wins again, Brandon's probably going to choke me when I get to Detroit.
True. So we already did our picks on the Lap Traffic podcast. My pick was somebody who I totally can't remember because I just pick on a whim and stuff. So you have to listen to that to find out.
Oh, I have no idea who I picked.
Who in the hellfire would I have picked for this race?
I think I picked Jimmy Johnson just to piss
yes.
people off.
Yes. Oh, I picked Martin Truex Jr. so that he couldn't. That's why.
Yeah.
That was the thing. I remember I was like, I picked John Hunter Nemechek in the Xfinity race.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'm picking Truex, so you can't. And he cussed me out. So good times. Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Dude. That brings it into those notes, but not the end of the podcast. We've still got 30 minutes for y'all. Listen, we like to do every, Sherwin, I think you said it, every quarter or so.
It's accidental, the timing, but that's about what the timing is. About once a quarter to bring y'all something completely off the wall that we think you'll like, that, well, mostly we think we would like, and that we think y'all would also like.
Well, you called it like a special segment. No, like
an introspective.
Yeah, yeah. Something completely different. And we want to drop that in for y'all. We talked.
Says you took Kyle Larson.
Oh, I took Larson. That's why. Yeah, so not Truex. I took Larson. Well, no, you took Jimmy because you switched. You were like, I'm going to pick somebody. And no, you were going to pick Harvick. And then you switched like that. This was 2 days ago and we can't remember. And it wasn't the booze. It's just the amount of NASCAR you talk.
Well, it's the amount of adrenaline.
yeah. You get all excited and all that.
Getting all fired up.
So with that, y'all, we're gonna drop this in for you. And this was a boatload of fun. You're going to learn something. You're going to laugh. We say that a couple times.
Oh, and this is segment. Hashtag Nerdneck. So it's going to fit our Nerdneck. Crowd pretty well.
Nerdneck.
Anybody that's following live, you're going to like this.
All right. Here we go. All right, we want to welcome to the show a very unique guest for us, Sherwin. She's a professional pharmacist. I don't know why I put professional there. Like, pharmacist, professional pharmacist sounds like for real, you know, versus, I mean, I can be a pharmacist sometimes, right?
Well, we're going to talk about some of this. There's redneck pharmaceuticals, and there's like a real, like a pharmacy where a pharmacist who got a pharmacy degree works.
Yeah. She runs the Pharmacist Answers podcast and has the Farm Life series on YouTube, which I thought was awesome. There's like PHAR, you know, of course.
A little play on words.
Oh, well, while we're, before we get too down, deep into whatever grandpa stories, let's welcome to the show, Cynthia Hendricks. What's up, Cynthia?
Well, hey guys, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. This is
sort of how it goes, by the way.
Yeah, it gets a little sideways. We didn't discuss that in a pre-show, did we?
No, we didn't.
Cynthia, let's start with you. Tell us about what you do and about your podcast and stuff and set the story straight on what's going on.
Yeah, sure. Well, I am a pharmacist. Got the degree, diplomas somewhere up there. And so I work in a retail pharmacy, so I see like real life people all the time making real life decisions on making sure they stay alive when they leave me. But one of my favorite things is actually teaching people about what they're actually taking or what conditions they maybe have when they come from the doctor and making it understandable for them. And while my employer may not give me enough time or pay me for all of the efforts I put into educating people, mm-hmm. teaching is really a passion of mine, and that's why I started the podcast, to really be able to take medicine and you put plain English words around it so that everyone else can understand how medications work in your body, how diseases work in your body, and that's really the pattern that the podcast has taken, where this is what this part of your body does. This is how it breaks. And then these are the things we try to do to fix it or how it can get better on its own. And then, unfortunately, sometimes there are some diseases that kind of alter how your body works and you just have to live with the changes the best you can afterwards. So
that is so
but
cool.
Education is kind of a passion in that. But I'm a nerd and I love the science and the medicine and the biology that goes behind it. So pharmacy was a good fit. And I don't have to deal with blood and guts like a doctor or a dentist.
Blood and guts. I love
hashtag nerdneck.
Yep.
That's what we call ourselves.
So we, I love that educational aspect, especially, I mean, I don't, knock on wood here. I don't have to go to the doctor or pharmacy all that often, but sometimes when I do, maybe a third of the time you go and you start asking a couple questions, hey, what's this? Or do I take it with food or whatever? And they just kind of look at me like, I don't know, whatever. So I need to come down to Livonia, Georgia. And
I have to Google it to find it.
Come
Sorry.
Visit yours. Sherwin, we got it's a funny story about how we met Cynthia. Why don't you give us that?
Yeah, so I just started listening to the Nakahoma Nation podcast.
Sorry.
And I think it was like the second or third episode that I got to where you and I think Josh's wife basically took the episode over.
Wife Brown, yep.
Yeah, so I was like, man, I can listen to y'all talk forever, first of all. There's nothing better to listen to than a female Southern accent. but you really sounded like you knew what you're talking about. So I listened to a couple of your farm podcasts, and I was like, this is somebody I want to have on the show as like a special interest piece, because we do one of those about once a quarter or so, and so it felt like it made sense.
Yeah. So the first question that I have for you is really about it's related to NASCAR, so we're bringing about what this podcast is about. Sure. Not too long ago, maybe a month or so ago, Denny Hamlin was on a show. And it was kind of an irreverent show, and he was sort of joking around, and he said, you know, all these drivers, everybody, you can't find nobody that's not on Adderall. And with recent light or recent stories of folks like, what was it, Allmendinger, who got...
For real got busted dinged for Adderall.
For Adderall. Mayfield, who, you know, there's still
who
questions
knows?
In the air. We were wondering. I mean, all that I know about Adderall is it's there to treat ADHD, which, you know, not to get political or whatever, but certainly has an overdiagnosis most likely in the world. And I knew people who would take it in college so they could study better and stuff. But
I know people now who take it to get high.
Really?
Yeah.
So across the board. So what? And that's a crazy thing. So in a race car going 200 miles an hour, if you've got Adderall brain, what does that mean? And what does Adderall do for somebody in a car?
Yeah, sure. So to start basic, if a child, because it's generally children, but school-age children are diagnosed with ADD or ADHD, and it's generally because they're exhibiting behaviors of being disruptive or not focusing, or their homework grades are poor because they're not able to focus and study to actually... take the time to learn the information or then to apply the information to an assignment. And so there's a diagnosis criteria that a doctor will look at using those reports from parents and teachers and say, maybe he's got an attention problem. And so we're going to give you a medication that's a stimulant, and that's the amphetamine class. That Adderall falls into. They're a group of stimulants. And a lot of people kind of freak out because it sounds backwards. Why do you want to give someone with ADHD, which the H is the hyperactive part, mm-hmm. why do you want to give someone with hyperactivity a stimulant? But the problem is the area of your brain that is responsible for focusing on tasks and giving attention to something that needs attention to be able to remember it once you leave, or retain the information, or use your higher thinking skills to apply that information to something else, to extrapolate. I'm sorry, I'm using big words. but to pull that information out and then apply it to something else that's related to it. The area of your brain requires a certain amount of chemicals to make that part of the brain activate. And generally in ADHD and just ADD, that attention deficit, that area of the brain isn't getting the nutrient and chemistry attention it needs from the rest of the body. So the other areas of the brain, like the areas of the brain that are triggered by sight, so you kind of have squirrel, because that visual stimulation pulls that area of the brain to the forefront of activity rather than the focus and attention part of the brain. So the amphetamine group, those stimulants, they stimulate that focus area of the brain and activate the chemistry there. So it becomes the top active part of the brain over things that the brain's going to hear and the things that the brain's going to see, so that those distractions can't pull the bandwidth, so to speak, from that area of the brain. So if you're in a situation that you need to focus, and we stimulate the focus area of the brain to help you pay attention, remember things. And I know racetracks are generally round most of the time, so every corner kind of looks the same, but being able to remember like what direction you're going, those kinds of things, having that attention part of your brain very active with the help of a stimulant is probably the reasons why. And that's the reason why a lot of athletes use it. You mentioned the Nakahoma Nation. We talked about PEDs. They had me come in and give my professional thought on PEDs in baseball. And while baseball is more about the hormone injections and the testosterone and all of those growth hormones and stuff, there was a period of time where greenies, which was essentially speed, was a big thing in baseball, and amphetamines, that stimulant class, is big in a lot of sports, because if you're going to be able to pay attention, because going around in a circle or an oval 500 times can get boring, and boring activities is going to allow that focus and attention and memory area of the brain to stop activating, because they're like, oh, I've seen this before. So to activate that brain then allows them to consciously say, okay, I've seen this corner before, but everything that's happening in this corner is slightly different, and being able to pick out those nuances and respond faster and recognize patterns in competitive drivers' habits based on what track they're on and what position they're in the field and those kinds of things. So if they want to be more attentive for this really long period of time of a race, then the stimulants give them that competitive edge.
So, I mean, I'm sold. I'm ready to take it now. Right. But, so that's the intent of it. How about either, mm-hmm. whether it be misdiagnosis, or let's just say guys are taking it because it gives them that sort of boost. What effects is that going to have on somebody who doesn't need it?
It can affect a lot of things. Some of the side effects that we have to warn parents about is, like, if your children show significant changes in their appetite, not wanting to eat, only wanting to pay attention to stuff, then that can be a problem. Mood changes. So in children, mood swings, like, I've got a 5-year-old, she has mood swings about 17 times a day. And so mood swings in children are normal. Extreme mood swings, like uncontrollable crying or aggression, can be a problem. So if you've got a grown man who is already biologically predestined to have hormones that lead him more towards aggression rather than towards, like, sobbing his eyes out, then you use something that you don't need that may trigger that aggression faster, then that becomes a problem. They become more grizzly bear-like than man-like, because that aggression is so easily triggered, and the anger is almost uncontrollable over something that kind of seems ridiculous. And in some respects, crashing a car and, like, blowing a tire can be detrimental in some places. NASCAR's kind of used to that. Racers should be kind of used to that. But yep. For something like that to really push somebody over the edge, it makes you wonder, like, do you just have a temper, or is there something else going on? And sometimes those questions will come into play to be like, maybe we should test you for some things.
That's really interesting to me on, both what it does, and if these guys are taking it, what's the danger there? Here's an interesting tidbit, Sherwin. We talked a few episodes ago where I'd went out and been studying flying, got my pilot's license. I'll tell you what, if you were diagnosed with ADHD as a child and take Adderall as a child, and even if you grow up and don't use it and you're done with it or whatever, you can't fly. You're not allowed to. FAA says absolutely not. So, because it's a psychological disorder, and they don't want, and I'm speaking out of my butt on this part, on the psychological disorder part, but they just don't want that type of person flying planes. So I'm sure there are other industries where if a parent is trying to take the quote unquote easy way out, that you're preventing a child who's innocent in this whole thing from being able to do something. So
I was listening to something the other day.
Crazy.
Yeah, I was listening to, I think I was listening to Joe Rogan the other day, and they were talking about what the overdiagnosis percentage might be. And and for all the dudes that are going to listen to this and think Cynthia is picking on dudes, she's not. This is basically a male disease. Like, there are very few girls that get diagnosed with this and get them prescribed these stimulant drugs. So it's, I don't know what that means. I'm sure it's a body chemistry thing.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of is. Part of it is, well, my soapbox about it, and my soapbox is getting kind of bigger as we go along, and I'm about to have to register my 5-year-old for kindergarten tomorrow. And so, there's a part of society that doesn't want boys to act like boys.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a part of me that when my 15th percentile 3-year old gets picked on by the boys at school because she's so tiny and easy to like pick up and swirl around, and I have to say, you need to teach those boys not to do that. But there is a part of being a boy that, and raising boys, that they require a lot of external gross motor sensory input. And so there is a part of society that doesn't want to allow boys to be boys. So if they start playing too rough or they're trying to feed those sensory needs to be able to like learn how to deal with their world when they're 5, 6, and 7, then you're trying to medicate that out of them. That's where I have a problem.
Yeah.
But there is scientific evidence that male brain chemistry and female brain chemistry starts long before. Like, obviously, there's, like, the X and Y chromosome thing, and, like, this isn't birds and the bees. but, like, there's that part that girls have two X's. So if one X is kind of broken, the other one can kind of make up for it, where with a boy, you got one X and one Y, and if one's broken, like, then the other one's probably not going to work, and if the Y is broken, then, like, you're just out of luck. But after that difference, there is what the way I refer to it, it's like a testosterone wash. So your mommy and daddy made you and decided you're going to be a boy. And then as you're growing as a boy inside your mommy, then the testosterone that Y tells your body to make, like, washes the brain and, like, kills stuff off.
Huh.
And then a separate testosterone wash happens somewhere during puberty, like 12, 13, that then like makes you go brain dead even more.
And so, causes you to look at porn.
Well, that's not necessarily what it causes, but like there is this brain chemistry separation that like continues to separate, because then women get to go through childbirth and they like grow new humans in their body, and that causes brain chemistry changes in one direction. Males are never going to get that, so you get this brain chemistry separation. It just kind of keeps going. So not saying that testosterone is the reason that you get ADD or ADHD, but like brain chemistry differences, there is that reason. And you know, testosterone, we blame a lot of things on testosterone, but like, it's just there.
It's a thing. It's been there for a while.
It does good things. So it's just, you know, we don't want to blame it for everything, but like, it is one of those things where like, you shouldn't take testosterone because it's going to, you know, do all of these terrible things to your manhood. Well, it created your manhood. So like, let's not beat on testosterone for that reason.
Yeah. So, in every podcast, one of the things that we always say is we like to learn something. And we like to laugh.
Yeah.
And that is fascinating. And I think we, whether it's recorded or not, I would love to sit here and talk forever right. about even on that topic, but all the rest of them, to learn what all these chemicals are doing to your brain and stuff. But
yeah.
But we did preview with you that, I mean, I have a confession. I am addicted to meth stories. I love meth stories. Meth stories are my favorite, and I can't get
remember
enough.
Remember that? You should have seen that meth lady I saw at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
She was in deep.
So, you said, and I can't imagine the types of folks, especially now, we were talking on the pre-show about you know, Sudafed, buying that, having to be regulated, and for me, it's just a pain in the butt. When I need some Sudafed, yeah. I go up there, and I feel like crap, and then I have to be like, okay, can I have the Sudafed? They're like, all right, give me your license, fill out this stuff, fingerprint. And I'm like, dadgummit, I just feel like crap. But I can't imagine the people that walk in who are there for the other reasons. And you had started telling us some of those things offline. And I said, let's have this on. So give us the story on my obsession with meth.
Oh, sure. Well, so in my area where I live really close to the South Carolina line. Mm-hmm. And it took... bureaucracy is just like slow, like it's just terribly slow, iceberg slow. It's ridiculous. And so the reason, like, you show your license, and we've got all this fancy technology that lets us scan the back of your license, and in case you didn't know, the back of your license has this crazy looking barcode on it that encodes your name and your address and your age and weight and driver's license number and your fingerprints and all of that stuff. Like, it's all there. It's all secret. So we can scan that and I don't have to like type things. You don't have to fill out a book or anything. But the problem is the state of Georgia system wouldn't ever communicate with anybody else. So we would get van loads. No joke. Oh, van loads. Not like your mom, soccer mom minivan, like 15 passenger.
Oh my God.
Like private school baseball team type vans. Full of people from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
They would just like pull up to the corner at our stoplight and let people out. And then they would, some would walk into our store and some would walk down the street to the next store. And then, and they would, the first person would come to the counter and we knew what they wanted. Like you saw them walk in and they had, we're not allowed to profile.
Right.
But when TV shows and news reports show you the people that are being busted for meth, they have this stereotypical appearance.
Right.
Their teeth are more rotten than normal. Their skin looks like it's falling off. And like they look like they somebody dug them up out of the cemetery and like sent them to the store. So these people are coming in, and the first person will ask for their product. They're like, I want that. So I turn around on the shelf, get it out, and then you see your driver's license. They hand me a driver's license from South Carolina, and maybe the first person has the driver's license. So I'll scan the driver's license. They have to do all the stuff on the pin pad, and I sell it to them. And they'll hand me a crisp $20 bill, like it just came out of an ATM machine or from the bank. And so, like, it's $6. Okay, so let's put it in the drawer, and I give them their change, and they walk away. It's, like, 60 seconds. The next person comes in, asks for the same thing, and he hands me an ID, and it's a state ID. So, like, a driver's license allows you to drive.
Right.
But then the state ID just, like, gives you an identification, so, like, maybe you can buy cigarettes or beer or whatever else you need to buy that has to, like, get into the club, I don't know, because you had to have a photo ID, and it's just a state ID. So you can't drive, but you're at least identified by the state. And so scan it. It's the same total, and they hand me back the same money that I gave the guy that just left me. And this will happen for about three times because a $20 bill will buy about three boxes of what they want. And so, it's like, do you think I'm dumb?
Yeah.
Do you think I'm stupid? Like, really? And then they will, I've got this one group, and they still come in. Like, South Carolina and Georgia finally started communicating about, like, who's buying what. So a lot of my South Carolina people, like, they'd go to the one place in South Carolina and then they would come over to me in Georgia because that meant they could get double.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, my system started blocking them, so I haven't seen a bunch of them in a long time. But then, like, but I still got this one group that will still come in. And just the other day, like, the guy didn't hide in the store well enough. So the woman is, like, doing her thing. I'm scanning her stuff. And I can see the guy, like, peeking out from behind the display to see if she's done. He was like, I see you. Like, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to ignore you. Are you kidding me? And so it's just, like, it got to the point where our one of our meth agents left his card with us, and he was like, if you have suspicious activity, just call us. And so we were like, hey,
you need speed.
We got some weirdos here. Yeah. Wow. We've even started where, like, we even had our narcotic agents. So like there's the DEA, and that's the federal people that are, like, really scary sounding.
Yeah.
That do all the stuff with controlled substances. And then the Georgia has the GDNA, which is the Georgia Narcotics group. And so our drug agent came to just do a, like, annual inspection, and he's like, you do know, because there's always this thing of, like, as do in customer service, we don't want to deny people stuff,
right?
Like, you want people to give you money in business and you want them to buy your stuff. But then it was like, well, I don't want to keep selling this to people when I knew they're doing illegal things. And our agent said, he was like, you know, you can do that. And so
So I had a guy come in, and his ID, like most IDs will have some type of hologram or some kind of security features on it, so it can't be easily copied. And he had just like peeled his hologram things off, and I could see like all the little fake, the little lines in it. You know, like if you look at a 3D movie without the 3D glasses on and how it like looks all weird and kind of like muddly and stuff, like something's wrong with my vision. Like that's what it looks like, because he had peeled the thing off, and I was like, I'm not selling you Jack with an ID like this. I was like, I'm sorry. He was like, you did it before. I was like, not me. Not this girl. Nope. I was like, that sheet of paper right there on that wall, that's what keeps my lights on and feeds my kids. Like, you, bye.
Yeah.
Bye. Wow. Like, I was like, I don't care if you tell me that it came off because you had to break in your own house. Like, you need to go to the DMV right down the road. It's 3 blocks that way, and have them fix it.
Right.
Because I'm not accepting this.
Holy moly.
It's just like people have all kinds of excuses, and they're always coming in, and they're like faking these symptoms, like these allergies are killing me today. Like, is it the allergies, or did you like just do cocaine before you walked in here? Because like those sniffles are a little excessive. So it's just like I can tell when people have the sniffles and like the allergy thing going on, right. And then I can tell when they're faking it because they got a smoker cough. Like, it's just. Like, you can't fool me. I'm not dumb.
What's the turnaround on that? So they get 3 boxes for $20, say. What is that worth to the person that they're turning around or whatever?
I don't know. But I do. We did learn that a lot of that, at least in our area, there was we knew when we were like talking to the guy in charge. Or if it was just all his little pawns, like he just picked up they drove the van around, picked up the homeless guy on the corner and said, take this $10 into the store and buy us this, and then we'll let you keep the other 10. Like, so people, like, they're just paying people off. Be like, you want to ride to Walmart, hop in our van, buy us this, and then like, we'll let you ride in our van. So it was crazy.
Wow, just dropping off zombies.
Basically.
Like, yeah, and then we're just waiting on either, like, our bad and busted newspaper that, like, tells us all the people that have been arrested to, like, those people to be in it. Like, we actually look for those things.
Yeah.
Or to hear some kind of news that somebody's, like, double wide blew up because we knew that maybe they mixed their meth recipe wrong and it just went bad. But there's times when we'll hear stories of be like, oh yeah, that house on that corner burned down. Oh yeah, that was a meth lab. We were expecting that to happen. So
it's like, a hell of a drug. One that
it's not safe to make, and it's not safe to take, and like it's just bad.
It's got to be a hell of a drug.
I mean something.
Boy,
I've watched like 3 or 4 different documentaries about it because, like you, Rusty, I am too obsessed with this. What are we
with
epidemic
meth stories?
Yeah, with meth stories, and it's like, good grief! I don't even know how to.
How good can it be? Like, ain't nobody blown up from a pot farm?
Well, you know? And so, and here's the thing. Here's the thing that I wonder is, so you got on the one side, you got the Breaking Bad thing where you have like a chemist that's doing it the right way, seemingly making the. You know, Colombian.
There was a lot
bam
of added fake science in that show, by the way.
Well, I'm sure there was. They had to, because not everybody's a chemist. They had to do some stuff to get people interested in it. But like, you got like the what is it? There is a way to make like the Colombian cocaine version of like completely clean meth that doesn't have all these other potential side effects. But it costs too much money for these guys to do that. And it's too hard to get the ephedrine.
That's the funny thing is, like, okay, well, if you're using the Sudafed ingredient, then why are you buying the Zyrtec D? like their meth is laced with Zyrtec, so like, you ain't got no allergies, you faking. Like, you put Zyrtec in your meth, you don't have allergies, you know. So it's just
wow.
It's just one of those things. That's like, if you actually stop and think about it, which these people aren't doing, it's like, that doesn't make any sense. And I know what you're doing. I know.
So from a chemistry standpoint, you may be able to shed a little bit of light on Well, we mentioned earlier, I don't think we had started the show yet. Jeremy Mayfield is one of the drivers that's had an issue and was not willing to play NASCAR's game. He was drug tested after having taken a double dose of Zyrtec and his normal prescription Adderall right after a race. And so they just said, you're on meth. And basically that was like 6 or 8 years ago or so. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And Mayfield maintains his innocence. There's no way those two chemicals could have registered as methamphetamine in a drug test. Is that consistent with your knowledge of the science?
Yes and no. Like, it depends on how sensitive their test is. Because Adderall is an amphetamine. That's that stimulant class that contains Adderall, Vyvanse, Ritalin, Focalin, Concerta. Those are all the fancy names everybody knows. They have really long names that I'm not going to no sense in me bragging on saying those, but they, that group, they're all called amphetamines. That's the class that they're in, and they're known as stimulants. So if methamphetamine is also an amphetamine, how sensitive is their test? Are they actually able to say this? I can identify this prescription amphetamine separate from the other, because a lot of times, like, we call it meth because saying methamphetamine is really hard and really long and lots of syllables in your mouth. And if you're drunk, like, that would be really, really hard to say. So, but it's one of those chemistry things where, think about types of alcohol. Like, there's methanol, which you don't want to drink. It'll kill you. Don't do that. and then there's ethanol. We like that one. That was good. There's the isopropyl alcohol, like, so there's these alcohols that have these funky little names. So methanol is an alcohol that has a certain little piece attached to it. So for it to be methamphetamine means that that meth part is a fancy little chemical that's attached to an amphetamine something.
Right.
So the amphetamines all have this amphetamine body. And depending on what they attach to it, determines on what it does and how your body recognizes it and if it's weaker or stronger than the previous one. So, again, how sensitive is their test? Is their test saying amphetamine, yes or no? Opioid, yes or no? Benzodiazepine, yes or no? Or is it actually able to identify the individual compounds to say, oh, well, this amphetamine marker is different than what the Adderall amphetamine marker looks like. And so, therefore, there was something else in your system.
Sure.
That's awesome.
Sure. Well.
So, those are things I don't know. I don't know that NASCAR is going to tell you.
Right.
How sensitive their test is.
Yeah, well, and but so you're caught left.
Those are the questions I get from people when they're like, I'm about to go get a new job. Is my, like, are my drugs going to show up on a drug test? And I'm like, you know, they might. Like, you need to be, you need full disclosure on everything ever. You know, because then there's the other people being like, do you have those system cleansing things? Because we have to go take a drug test tomorrow. Nope, sorry. Drink lots of water. That's all I can say.
Good luck. Talk to you next time.
Try again later.
With that, we've been, again, I could sit here and Sherwin just do this for the next 2 hours.
Well, we'll do it again is what we'll do.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll come better prepared with the questions. But sure. Cynthia, we want to thank you so much.
We didn't get to my Cialis talk. We'll have to do
that. Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much for joining us, Cynthia. This is awesome, eye-opening. We laughed, and we learned something.
Yeah, we did.
So, thank you so much. We're looking forward to the next one, though.
Sure, anytime. All right.
Tell the folks where they can find you.
Oh, so you can find me. I've got the Pharmacist Answers Podcast. That's my page on Facebook. The Farm Answers Pod, which is PH Farm, on Twitter, is where you can find the podcast announcements. I am at Sin Hendricks if you want to see all of my non-pharmacy stuff that goes on, because I do all kinds of things. The Farm Life with a PH is my vlog on YouTube, which is all things about trying to keep my kids alive and Ken alive on the farm with an F, because we do have a farm with real tractors and real cows and all of that stuff. So yeah, it's an adventure, and this is not, it's a little bit of everything, but my main pharmacy website is intelleximed.com, and that's intelleximed.com, intelleximed. So it sounds like intelligent, just with like the X in the middle.
Got it.
So
awesome. Well, thanks again, and we'll look forward to the next one.
Sure.
Y'all, welcome back.
Hell of a show.
Oh, that was so much fun talking with Cynthia, and so much fun with talking with Leilani. A double shot for you this week.
Which, that's right. In our March of Ladies.
Right. And that special thing, man, I love doing that every great once in a while like this, where we get to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about, and we get to sit there and listen because we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the difference, like doing the focus piece or the introspective that we talked about. Having somebody on that's a racer who also has a lot of interesting other things that she's using her racing acumen to promote, you know,
what she's doing.
However you want to accept that. And we want to continue our march on having our march full of ladies. So
that's right.
Next week we're going to be bringing you Trisha Westfall, who is a student at Virginia Tech, doing the PR racing thing, and that should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. So with that, let's start closing it out. We've y'all know where to find us. There comes, speaking of the ladies, there it is. With that, y'all know where to find us. We had a blast this week. Hope y'all had some fun, learned something, laughed something. And as always, having fun. That's what we're here for. Raise your glasses, y'all. Y'all know where to find us. TTM Podcast. You can find me, Tailgate Mayor Rusty Wallace, at Tailgate Mayor.
You can find me, Andrew Sherwin, at Free Game Engineer. And if you Google PETM Racing Podcast, you'll find any and every possible place that you might want to consume what we're doing.
Thank you, everybody, who was hanging out on YouTube for the whole thing. I know it's been an hour and a half, but, you know, sometimes it just goes like that, you know?
Yeah, and if you're listening on iTunes, go give us a rating. That's fun.
Why not? Even if it's one star.
Yeah, sometimes that happens.
All right, we'll talk to y'all next week. Skew!